Et Naim, Nikki Yasam Hilo, Nikki Machuptamaidu. Hello, everyone. My name is Hilo, and I'm Machuptamaidu. We acknowledge and are mindful that Chico State stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, the Machupta, and we recognize their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that have sustained the Machupta people for centuries and continue to do so today.
All right, Teresa, we are recording.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of our podcast, First Generation, One of Many. Our mission is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness and understanding, provide voice for students and alum, as well as present resources for faculty, staff, and students working for and collaborating with first generation students. So super excited to be back. I missed you all last week, but I'm back again. And of course, along with my amazing co-host, Josh. Hey, Josh.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you for coming back and saving the ship. Ah, my gosh, last week was tough. I think I had to stop recording at least once or twice because I messed up the intro both times until the third take, I think.
We may have to switch the order again because you're getting a little rusty, Josh.
No, you do great in the beginning there. That makes the whole show start off on a good note. I think mine was more like, our mission is to create an archive of discuss. I couldn't get it because you're so good at it. Yeah, so thank you for coming back. It's great to see you again. And I have to say it is nice with all the changes happening that I get to wander around campus and go check out classrooms and computers and technology and see how it's working and play with it. And in that effort, I get to at least see you now almost once a week, it seems like, in person the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. So that's been great.
Yeah.
So let's move right on in to our episode today. I will have a quote for us first, and then we'll discuss a little bit of the topic and then introduce our guests and then just roll through from discussion and hear from them on their experiences of past and present. So the quote for this week comes from Peekaboo Street, the snow skier Olympian from the United States. And her quote says, "To uncover your true potential, you must first find your own limits, and then you have to have the courage to blow past them." So maybe that gives you the idea of what our topic is this week. We are joined by two guests, and we're going to talk about the intersection of being first generation and a scholar athlete as well. All right, Teresa, you want to take us away with our first intro?
Yes, of course. So it's my pleasure to introduce one of our guests, Yanisa Velasquez. Yanisa was born in Chico, California, and raised 20 minutes from Chico in the small town of Orland. After high school, she went to Feather River College to continue her academics while playing a captain's role on the women's basketball team. After 2 years there, she graduated with an associate's degree in social science and behaviors, and then transferred to Chico State to pursue her BFA in interior architecture. Yanisa is currently going to be a senior at Chico State in the fall of 2021 and still has 2 years until she obtains her BFA. And we're all looking forward to the day you graduate. So thanks, Yanisa, for being here today with us. And it's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk.
Yes, I'm excited to hear more of your story. All right, Josh, take it away.
Yeah, and this is great. Another connection for me to the show is that I didn't know Yanisa. And then when I was working at the OP, she scheduled an appointment to come in and talk about academic things. And then along the way, basketball came up and I said, "Oh, you want to be on an episode of the podcast?" And at first she said, "I don't know, man. I think that's a little bit wild. You're asking me." And then 2 days later, though, it was awesome. She emailed me back right away and said, hey, you know what? I'm in. I want to do this. So I'm so glad that you are joining us.
Thank you.
And now our second guest is Felipe Restrepo, who is in his 14th year as Chico State's head men's soccer coach. And entering the 2021 season, he has guided the Wildcats to a 130-66-31 record with 9 postseason appearances in his helm. And Felipe has led the Cats to 3 California Collegiate Athletic Association North Division crowns and 1 NCAA West region title while making 9 trips to the conference championship tournament and 4 NCAA championship tournament appearances. While in college, Felipe was a midfielder at UC Davis, where he was a 4-year letter winner, starting 52 of the final 55 games for the Aggies, and during his junior year was second team All-Northern California Athletic Conference selection. He's also been a member of the state and regional Olympic development program teams. In 1999, he attended the U.S. Soccer Festival with the U23 region team. Now, academically, Felipe received his bachelor's degree in human development at UC Davis in 1998, a master's in multicultural education at Cal State Monterey Bay in 2001, and then he didn't have enough and wanted to keep learning, so he went back and earned his doctorate in social organization and educational policy at UC Davis in 2014. Welcome, Felipe.
Wow, that just made me sound old. Thanks, Josh. Excited to be a part of the conversation, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, great. I think that's one of our goals on this show, is to make the staff and faculty feel old by bringing in students to the show as well, so we can feel aged and experienced. Right? I'm always fascinated when I see records for soccer, because there's so many ties involved compared to any other sport. So there's a lot to be learned in ties, I think, right?
Yes.
All right. So let's jump right into the first question, and we'll hear from both of you on most of these questions, I think, as appropriate. We set them up that way. But at what age did you feel you became an athlete, and what got you into sports? Anissa, you want to start us off?
Yeah. So I started at, like, I want to say 8 years old, just because my siblings, I have 2 older siblings, so they played basketball. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should play. But when I did it, I wasn't really into it. And I was like, nah, this isn't for me. And then a year later, I was like, oh, maybe it is for me, because I always watch them practice. And then, of course, I was like the younger sibling wanting to do what they did. So then after that, I did track, softball, basketball, cheerleading, and soccer. And my mom just really wanted to get me into sports, just so I had, so I could meet new people, make new friends, and things like that.
And when did you, after that, beginning into it, when did you know, like, hey, that you, like, loved basketball?
Probably, like, middle school. I was starting to get more serious about it. And then I joined, like, other teams and did things in the summer and stuff.
All right. Felipe.
I was the young kid in the back of the classroom with ants in his pants. So I couldn't sit still. I needed to get the energy out. And my parents and the adults around me needed to find a way for me to just let it all out. And what a better place to do that than the playground. So anything that had a ball, a race, a score, any game outside I could kind of get myself involved with, I needed to do that. I found that being outside and being competitive and playing ball was kind of my outlet to zone in on all the other things of my life. So from the very get-go, I just started to play. And then as I kind of got older, again, the adults around me found me to participate in teams and more organized sports. And I just really enjoyed, I think at that point, really enjoyed the aspect of team, being part of a group, working towards something, setting outcomes, small and large ones, and seeing the fruition of the hard work with your peers. And so that really, for me, kind of persuaded me to engage more in the organized team sports. And I've just had a lot of fun doing that. And then slowly kind of turned into a career. So.
And what age or kind of when did you gravitate to soccer?
You know, I played multiple sports in high school and kind of junior high. I never really had, never thought that I would kind of just specialize, but soccer was always my love. It was something that I just enjoyed. I loved the culture of the sport. Again, I loved the team camaraderie of the game. And then I just really, I'm kind of an analytics geek. And I love the shape and the movements and the way the ball moves and kind of the way the game is played. And so that really intrigued me to kind of keep working at the craft. And it's something that I still to this day continue to work at. And it's just something that I've got a love with. And it's been great.
And I want to share, I went in to visit and saw Teresa on her lunch break recently and walked in and she's watching soccer. I didn't know she was so into soccer, it never came up. And of course, this was a big time of year then. This episode's being recorded, you know, early July 2021, and the Euro Cup 2020 just finished like what, 3 days ago. And Teresa, I asked her, who do you think has a chance for the World Cup next year that's coming around or whatever? She said, oh, Italy's probably the team that people have to beat. Like they're up there. And they won like a week later, they won the Euro Cup. So if you want to know soccer, talk to Teresa. She's got the inside scoops.
And have so much more to learn. So I'll be finding you at some point in time.
So on that note, how does the US team look to fare next year in the World Cup?
Well, I think they gotta qualify.
They gotta get there first.
And okay. we've had some issues with that. So we've been struggling to kind of get to that point. So, but with that being said, we've got some young talent that are playing all over Europe. And it's pretty neat to see the new generation kind of perform at a much higher level, play with the top teams in the world. And so we're hopeful that you'll see the U.S. kind of represented on the world stage again. And be more competitive. So, but the beauty of our game is everybody's good and you just don't know what's going to happen on any given day. You saw that in the Euros, you saw that in Copa America. There's so many great teams and great players and it is the world's game and it's really fun to see people engaged and rooting for their team, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably the best part just to see the amount of support and passion that the countries have for their team. So it's amazing. I love that part of it. Okay, so I have a question for you all. So when it comes to when you were in your time of being a student athlete and when you were doing your sports, how did you balance sports and your home responsibilities, whatever those may have been? Maybe it was work or maybe you supported your family to an extent. So how was that for you both? What was your experience like? And Yanisa, if you're ready, you could go ahead and start with you.
So I was obviously like in high school, I was an athlete in high school and then an athlete in college. But in high school, my mom had like a little bit of leniency, like, cause she made us do chores, obviously help around the house. But, she had leniency just because we had sports after school or had sports, had games and had to travel and stuff. But she also gave us responsibilities like, okay, you need to do this, this, and this, after school and you got to make time for it or else I can't take you to practice and things like that, which helped with my responsibility later on when I moved onto college. I was always like, okay, with my teammates, like we need to do our homework before we go out to the river and have fun or go out and do this. Like I was kind of like a mom figure to them just because my mom was like that to me, but in the end it was helpful. So
yeah, it's good. I feel like it's kind of adds that, it gives you that organization or kind of like the self, I know the word, but I can't think of it right now, but it's a structure for yourself and kind of being rigid in that term of what to do first and knocking that out. So you have the time for sports.
Yes, exactly.
Some self-discipline.
Yes, there you go.
I know that can be a tricky one. Yeah.
Felipe. You know, speaking of home, I was fortunate to have two incredible parents that were just remarkable people, and they were super focused, very driven. You know, they both came to this country in their teens and they had to make things work. And so they passed those values down to their three boys. I'm the oldest. So when I went to college, I stuck close to home. So I was always nearby, but I always felt like I had the autonomy to go for it. And I had the family support network to support that. I worked my whole time while I was in college to help pay for the bills. My family supported me as well. But it was kind of known that it was my opportunity to go do something and make something happen for myself as they had done it for themselves. But they were supporting their children here. So I can't thank them enough for the parents that they were and for the goal, not the goals, but for the values that they instilled in me when it came to facing adversity, putting your head down, working hard, setting small goals to hit the larger ones. And really kind of thinking about the bigger picture as it came to going to school, obtaining a degree and what that life would look like afterwards. And that's something that I can't, you know, that I'm so appreciative of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
And that kind of, you kind of swept from high school to college. You kind of covered two of our questions in one in there. So that was nice. Because some of it was, even more specifically, I guess, when you were in college and playing on the teams, did you find yourselves to have different responsibilities being first generation compared to some of your teammates who were not first generation? Did anything stand out from that experience? And maybe it didn't.
Well, I'll speak for myself. I went to a school that was very white, and I think maybe I was one or two, I think there's two of us, my freshman year, Latinos on the team. And for a long time, I was the only one. I think my senior year, we had another one. And so in terms of identifying with my teammates and what they were encountering and experiencing, very different than what I was kind of going into. So, but at the same time, I wasn't really adding too much value to that. I was focused on playing. I wanted to be a leader in my team. I was focused on school. I went there as a biochem major. I wanted to be a doctor. So I was focused on getting to the classroom, getting to the library, and doing everything that I possibly could as an athlete to give myself the competitive edge to be able to play and perform. So between that and working, I had plenty of things to keep my mind and focus on those things, you know. So
right. And then you two both, oh, sorry, you two shared the exact opposite in your family setup. Felipe, you were the oldest. Yanisa, you were the youngest. Mm-hmm. So that built in some dynamics that might have been a little bit different of some responsibilities you then had in those roles. Yanisa, you might have gotten to where you had fewer responsibilities because there weren't younger siblings for you to help with, and you had older siblings. And then Felipe, you may have been forced to help, right, with some of the younger siblings.
Yeah, so I basically, like, I saw they messed up with something. Oh, okay, I won't do that. Like, that was easier for me, but they had all the bad of it.
I was the opposite. Don't mess up, right? Mm-hmm. You're the older brother, and you need to lead by example. And I took that responsibility on. The three of us aren't too far apart. And so I made sure that my siblings saw me chasing some of those ideas. They saw me working toward them. I was there for them as they were trying to build their opportunities. And a matter of fact, the second brother, there's three brothers, the second brother actually went to UC Davis as well. And we were roommates 2 years later. And he had an incredible career at the school and has a wonderful career now with his profession. And so he's also gone on to have a UC degree and get a master's degree and do really well for himself. And I think that when it comes to, again, this whole team scenario, our family at that point really functioned in a team setting where we were supporting each other and we had the right language and narrative around each other. And we were finding each other doing things right and supporting those things. And so we were able to lean on each other as siblings to kind of elevate ourselves a little bit.
That's awesome. And one thing, I feel like I've heard this before, maybe there's quotes around it that phrase it similarly, but one thing about sports is whether you're watching it and you have that commonality with someone else, or you're actually the athlete playing that sport, is essentially it's all equal ground. Like, cause you're looking at the skill, you're looking at how you're playing the game with one another. And it's not so much based off of other things, kind of everything is left outside and then you're on your own little world while you're playing or where you're watching it. But even with that said, you know, of course there's distinctions on as teammates and then just in today's culture and society. Did you both ever feel like at one point in time being an athlete of color impacted your experience, whether positively or negatively?
For my school, I went to like a small, very small community college. It was very diverse. We had people from other countries go there, and then different states. So I feel like we were all figuring it out together. And our experience, I had a great experience there. Sorry, I brain farted. I don't know where I was going with this.
I'll add the sound effect later on the episode for you.
I feel like the diversity on your team, Yanisa, kind of helped bring you all closer. Was that ever a factor in that, or, you know, a point that kind of you felt more comfortable like playing or anything like that?
Yeah, it was really what brought us together, actually, because we were learning about their different cultures and our different cultures and seeing what they did at their old school or like their high school and how they grew up. So there was like this division, but it was a good division between everybody.
Yeah. Thank you.
Complete culture shock for me. I mean, everything, the university culture, the way that it's habitus, the way things are done there were completely different than what my neighborhood looked like, what I experienced growing up. And so I really had to kind of figure out how this is going to work and how to really play the game in terms of getting a college degree and being successful in the university system. It was really hard connecting with people that were feeling the same way because there weren't a lot of us. I had some great teammates and some awesome friends that I still have to this day, but they experienced the world a lot differently than I did. And so me being able to have those conversations with others while I was in the middle of it was complicated. And at times you kind of felt lonely. And so I had to seek professors, teachers, staff, support staff, coaches, and seek as many people as I could to kind of find my way. And luckily I had an incredible amount of support to kind of make sense of things a little bit for me. But this transition from home to college is not easy. It's extremely difficult. And so finding good support network is super important as you kind of move along to find success in academia. It's just the way it, at least it was for me. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you touched on. I was right before this recording today, I was meeting with a colleague from Massachusetts, who's one of the associate directors for the NASPA's Center of First Generation Student Success. And one of our topics we're trying to work on some different areas is college students, specifically first generation students, and the social and emotional development that that students go through as they come to universities that we know historically when they were built traditionally did not have first generation students of color, women, or other groups for gender identity or sexual orientation. None of those groups were in mind, right, when these campuses were built starting in the mid 1600s. And still today, many are operating under these policies and procedures. And so it's very important that you say that, because that's, like you said, a lot of it's just on our own as first generation students out there trying to find a way. And if you don't know who to ask, how do you ask when it comes up there? And so also I wanted to say, so Felipe, you've been interested in this obviously for your whole life, but then academically you did a lot. And you know, you shared with me your dissertation I was able to read through a few years back, and your whole thing was on something about like how student athletes negotiate and discover identity was part of your focus.
Yeah, so at the UCs they breed research professors. So one prong is how you do research. And I'm a cultural anthropologist by trade, an ethnographer, and looking at discourse analysis. And then the other piece is, the theoretical stuff. So I have critical race theory and the identity stuff and how young students, athletes of color transition from home to university setting. I wanted to know more about it and I wanted to help others kind of find their way in a successful way through the university system. So the data will tell you connections to campus and staff, having professors and teachers with similar experiences that you can connect with, the list goes on, right? And we've gotten better as a university system and in higher ed to meet some of those needs, but there's still a long ways to go. So I, in a small way, try to make my impact with the student athletes that I coach. And over just the 14 years I've been here at Chico State, I think we've graduated close to 100 kids, but out of the 100 that have graduated, there's a good 43 or 44 that are first in their families to go to college. And so my opportunity to help guide that experience, because I've walked in those shoes a bit, and then also kind of lead the charge in higher ed a bit to say, hey, these are the things that are needed to have that success. Take note, right? And so we've been fortunate in our program that our boys men are having a lot of success, not only in the classroom, but on the field, but with career choices and family afterwards. So I'm really proud of that.
All right. So, you know, it's as if we planned the podcast ahead of time with topics and discussion points. And so we're going to jump to our last question and then we'll backtrack at one point, because you started to allude to this, but we think it'd be good to hear from both of you. For Felipe, what is it like recruiting first gen students? What's that experience like when you're including their families and situations and towns and their backgrounds involved there and their cultures? What's that like? And then what's it like working with them once they come to campus? You started to allude to it, but it'd be great to hear from you there. And then for Yanisa, what was it like being recruited as a first generation college student? And then once you got to campus, what was that like? So if Yanisa, you want to start?
Yeah. So I actually, when I went to my first year at Feather River, I had my brother with me. He was on the men's basketball team. And so there was a lot of, I could rely on him if I needed someone to talk to or someone just to hang out with. But then prior to that, my sister had gone there for 2 years. So it was sort of very sort of comforting that I had him. And then my sister had been there for 2 years. So I kind of knew like the ropes around things. But it was good because the sophomores like kind of took you under their wing as being a freshman, not knowing anything about the town and anything around you. And so you're kind of learning from them. And then once you become a sophomore, then you take the freshman under your wing and just teach them the ropes of everything around you and what you can and programs you can get into to help your situation with anything. So it was nice to rely on others and have their support as well.
That's great to hear and learn that Feather River has a really good system in place, it sounds like, to help bring in athletes of all kinds. And the second thing I learned is if I'm ever invited to be part of a 3-on-3 basketball tournament, I'm going to get Yanisa and her brother, so at least 2/3 of our team can play basketball.
For sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, and Felipe, how about you? Is for recruiting students, what's that experience like when you are, like I said, working then with them, but also their families and sometimes extended communities in that? And then once they get here, what's that like?
Well, it's super impactful and rewarding, one, for the young man and for myself. I feel like I'm working where I need to be working, right? But I think, you know, I'm a little bit of a mutt, right? So I'm part academic and part coach and athlete. So one of the things about coaching, at least coaching my sport and those who watch soccer, is the coach is very much has to be an optimist. This is just who we are if you're going to have any success. So I live my life this way, and my challenges always get reframed into the positive. I always find the light. And I think I'm saying this because my conversations with families and first gen students who may feel like this experience could be a daunting one, I see the light in the, and I try to demonstrate or paint the optimism in the experience and where those opportunities that that can arise through his experience can lead you. And I'm proof of it, right? So I speak from that space. And I think when I get around families and students, they feel and hear that optimism, and it begins to kind of offer more, if not hope, that they can do it and this can happen for them and their families and for their communities. So like I said, we've got quite a few kids that have graduated with degrees and they're going back into their neighborhood. And we have these conversations. You get to go back into your neighborhood with that piece of paper and you get to have those conversations with that next generation who have seen you, and now you can be the mentor and you can uplift and mobilize others. And so that's what I see happening within our group, where we have all these great people going out into the world in their own communities and really mobilizing others with that level of optimism and hope that it can be done. This is how you can do it. You got to keep your head up. You got to keep your head forward. You got to have a support network around you. And that it's possible. And those dreams that are kind of out, those pie in the sky goals, they're attainable. They're attainable. And so I think that's, when you ask me that question, I think that's where, that's the space that I speak from. And I think it tugs at people a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. Right, Teresa, when we see students coming in through EOP especially, that's one of the common threads, right, is that students are saying, I want to come here so I can go back and be a mentor and be a role model for other people in my town or my family, right?
Right. And then if they don't already have that mentality, it's nice to have someone in their sphere of influence that does kind of give them that that tidbit of mentality, because I feel like a lot of the times, not stereotyping, but as a, you know, a general kind of generalization, I guess, would be as first gen students, we are told to like get out of our communities, go out and be bigger, do something else, like huge for ourselves. And it's never really a common narrative to say, you know, go get your education, get your degree, do what you want to do, and bring that back to empower your community and others around you to let them know they can do the same. And it's not a negative thing. And it's not something that should be looked down upon, to come back home and do work here from the roots up. So I think that's a really important thing to know, because I wasn't told that until I was in college. And I appreciate being told then, because then I wouldn't have really thought about it as a positive aspect in my life. So that's an important thing to remember too.
There's some challenges along the way, right? So even the own in your community are saying, hey, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't get it, right? There's right. people in the neighborhood that are like, why are you leaving? Right?
Yeah.
And then you get it, and then you get here, and then you got people that are here going, why are you here?
Yeah, you know? It's a little bit of everything.
And so now you're dealing with that. You're like, come on. And so those are all challenges, but you know, with a high level of optimism and hope and a good team around you, you push through that stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Jeff? For me, this is wonderful with a lot of my research and work and focuses around social and emotional development. And athletics really seems to encapsulate some of that for people who are involved, from the players up to the coaches, to assistants, to anyone else working with a team that's not built into higher education, right? So athletes are getting a little bit extra to help them in that cause. And then I have to share, Felipe is really truly speaking from his heart. And I've seen it firsthand of how he does work with people and optimism, but he's also pragmatic, and he'll tell you like, hey, it's going to be a lot of hard work. Hey, it's going to be tough. Hey, there's going to be ups and downs in this process, because 8 years ago, if you can believe that, Felipe, 8 years ago, he was a coach for one of my kids on a U7 soccer team, right? That was 8 years ago. So our kids are already now 15 years old, but yeah, I saw it firsthand with how he worked with not just 7-year-olds, but many of the parents, right? Hey, why is my kid not playing? And Felipe would always have this optimistic view about experiences and what you learn from your role on a team and all these things. It was really good to see that firsthand as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now we do have one more question, right? Teresa, you want to go with that one?
Yes. So this might be a loaded question, a whole other rotten life. But if it weren't for sports, if you weren't involved in sports, what do you see yourself, or what path do you think higher ed would have taken you to, or what support do you think you would have had in your higher ed journey? So I know, Yunisa, you did basketball in community college, and right now you are just a full-time student, correct?
Yes.
What do you think, or what would you say sports helped you with? And if you didn't play basketball in community college, how do you think your trajectory would be different in education?
So I feel like if I didn't start with playing sports and doing school, I wouldn't have felt as motivated, because I obviously hadn't had the grades to play the sport as well. But I wouldn't have probably like reached out to people or met all these like amazing people and have the support of like coaches and teammates and athletic directors and athletic trainers like I had when I was there. And then once I moved on to Chico State, I no longer had that connection with like athletic directors or coaches. It was kind of like me on my own. But I feel like it gave me like a jump start, like, okay, I need to get into this program and join these type of things and do scholarships in order to get my full years of school and things like that.
Makes sense. Thank you. Felipe, what about yourself? Where do you, if it wasn't for soccer, where would you be?
Oh my, I don't know. I think that's one of the reasons I'm still in it, right? Mm-hmm. I love it so much. I don't know what I would do without it, right? Mm-hmm. I definitely know that I would be a student, lifelong student, and be teaching because I'm passionate about working with people and helping, you know, people mobilize and kind of progress through the university system. So I think at some level I'd be involved in the university, but I'm different in the sense that I'm doing that. I'm also doing sports. So I just have a love for the game that I did not want to leave it. So I think a lot of the people around me were frustrated because I was heading down an academic path, and I finished and still am, but I kept my sport, and I wanted to do both. I didn't want somebody telling me, hey, you have to pick, you have to choose. And I think this sounds familiar to all of you, right? You're going through your journey and someone's saying, oh, you can't do both of those, you have to choose. And I wasn't ready to make a choice, and I still am not. So
now, so a question popped up in my mind for you both is, how often do you get out and still play, physically play the sport? Felipe, you might do it more often because you're coaching, but Yanisa, how often do you get out and play basketball nowadays?
Honestly, it's been like a couple months just with COVID and like gyms closing down and things.
Yeah.
But a week after I just finished basketball for my second year at Feather River, COVID hit. So then it got into like this drought of, I don't need a workout, I can take a break. And then I was like, I'll give it another month, I'll start working out again. And then it was another month and another month. And then like 8 months later, I was like, I haven't touched a ball in like 8 months. And so I like went to the park and played, and I was gassed after a while, but it was fun playing again. But now I've gotten into like weightlifting more again. And then we've created like this own art in our garage, like a little gym. So that's been helpful and stuff. So yeah.
That's good. You have to get yourself a little Nerf hoop so you can at least shoot around the house there, right?
Yeah, we actually have a basketball hoop in the front.
There you go.
Why I haven't used it.
Oh. Well, it sounds like you're heading that way to get back out to it, though.
Yeah, for sure.
How about you, Felipe?
Oh, I'm always doing something. So
do you get to play soccer almost every day?
Not every day, but I try to kick a ball every day. And it's less and less that I get into a game, but I love the whole process and working out and getting prepared for it. So I try to do that every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever just sit around the house and just practice juggling the ball while you're just around?
Absolutely.
The house?
I actually, if I could point my, my computer, I have a shooting wall at my house.
So inside there?
It's actually on the side of the house, and it's
a big
like 10-foot wall, and you can hit the ball at it and it comes right back at you.
Oh, how cool.
Nice.
You know, parents sometimes say no balls in the house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not at my house.
You shoot the ball at the house.
I'm still the one around getting in trouble here, encouraging horseplay in the house. And then people always tell me, no, not in the house, Josh. Oh, gosh. All right. Well, I think that gets us to the end of our questions that we have here. Unless, Teresa, did you have any more that popped up for you?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Then that will lead us into our recommendations. All right. So, Felipe, what recommendations do you have for our listeners today?
Well, I think based off the topic of conversation we had today, the two that come into mind on campus would be the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion and the Student Success Center, both a wealth of resources, where students can get access to mentors, events that are going on, information that's for things that are happening on campus, and a great opportunity with an incredible people to connect with and build that community for yourself as you transition from home to school. And then the other resource was straight out of athletics. Our strength and conditioning coach, Colin Guggenhauer, who does puts out a wealth of information on Instagram and social media about health and wellness. And so if anyone who's interested in getting in shape and having a positive mindset and really thinking about how you fuel your body, this would be a great resource for you.
And as usual, all of these links will be in our show notes, whether you follow us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google, or our website, firstgenoneofmany.com. All the links will be there for you. Thanks for sharing those. Those are three great ones. And if you're not a Chico State student, staff, or faculty, you can still contact those resources if you're around the community, or even if you're outside of California, you can always email them, check out their websites, and see what kind of resources they may be able to share with you as well, too. Okay, Yanisa, what recommendation do you have for us today?
So lately I've been getting into journaling more and your mental health. And things that I put in my journal would be like things I'm grateful for and just combing through the thoughts I have and understanding my feelings clearly. I feel like it's really good to be aware of how you're feeling and why you're feeling these sorts of ways. So that link will be provided with the other ones as well.
Yeah, excellent. I think that's exciting for me. Like I've already mentioned, a lot of my work is around social and emotional development. So that's extremely important personally for folks to be doing. And Teresa, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a common theme through our episodes for this year have come from students more often than not about taking care of mental health.
Yeah, it definitely has. And most importantly too, making sure that it stays relevant. I know we hear it everywhere on a bunch of different platforms, but it's for a reason, like the importance and the relevancy of taking care of yourself and your mental health.
Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. And there will be a link to journaling for mental health kind of tips, how to go about it, some activities that are from the University of Rochester that has a great site on that. All right, Teresa, what do you have for your recommendation?
Yeah, so I just have a show on Netflix. So if you have a subscription to Netflix, it's a show I recommend called Last Chance You, and it's a documentary series. And what I like about it is that it talks about, and it showcases athletes at a community college level who play football. And it's important because it talks a lot about their backgrounds and their different backgrounds, and their students who are doing the sports route in community college as kind of like essentially like a last chance. So they're from troubled backgrounds, maybe they've gone to trouble themselves. Their other routes would have led them to, you know, different paths in life. So this is kind of like their one shot at being able to help themselves in and it's a show that talks about that. So I think it's just really good to get to know the athletes and all the different backgrounds that they, struggles that they go through as well.
And it seems as if many of the athletes they highlight, even though the team roster has 50 or more people on it, they tend to highlight what, 5, 6, or 7 throughout the series. And almost all of them are first generation college students.
Exactly.
So there's that message. And I find myself, I think they've had what, 3 or so seasons of that show. And I'll watch it and I'll fast forward through episodes and kind of get to the end. And then I like to see the end, like what happened as they finish their community college career and see where they go. And some of them go on to play at Division I or Division II. Some don't go on to play, but they continue their academic side of being in higher ed. So a lot of really uplifting stories that I think is important with working with first generation students quite often. And Felipe mentioned it earlier, but are there people who look like me, who sound like me, who have similar experiences as me? Are they successful in these areas? So I think that's one really wonderful message at the end of that series each season, that mm-hmm. there are people that may look, sound, act, have these experiences like you that are finding success in their own ways and things they want to do. So you can have that as that motivation that both Yanisa and Felipe mentioned earlier as the first generation student athletes.
Right. And I'll throw.
Go ahead.
So with that Netflix series, I mean, yes, you have to have the subscription to pay for it, but another thing that you can do that's free if you don't have the Netflix subscription to watch that show is another recommendation would be just Google what's going on in sports nowadays. Because most often, maybe if you're not interested in the actual sport, it's tied to a bunch of different other social aspects in your community that can be of concern to you and related to a bunch of other things that you might be experiencing at like the professional athlete level. And I'm going to be blunt, and I'm referring to the Sha'Carri Richardson situation when it comes to the Olympics. So just like brushing up and keeping tabs on what's going on and seeing, you know, what part of it you can do for it and what your stance is. So just fully support and just educating yourself and Googling things like that.
Yep. Thank you. A lot of controversy, right? And a lot of things we can learn through mm-hmm. sports, whether we play them or not. Yeah. So my recommendation is also a Netflix documentary series. We didn't plan this at all. Teresa put hers up. I was thinking, and it hit me a few weeks ago. A student was in a class of mine last year at the beginning of COVID, the first semester, and we became good friends. She was living in New Jersey, moved to California. Her dad came to visit recently, and he and I got to know each other and go out and play disc golf one day. And she was talking about things she played and got into, and her sport was cheer in high school. And then she recommended this documentary on Netflix called Cheer. And it also is similar to Last Chance U, and it follows athletes who are on a cheer squad at a school in Texas, the school is very successful for years and years of winning a number of national titles, but it shows the mental, physical, emotional anguish and struggles and successes that these athletes go through. So that's my recommendation for this one. So Teresa, as mm-hmm. usual, unfortunately, time has told us we are done. So if you mm-hmm. want to take us out.
Yes, exactly. So thank you all for listening and tuning into this episode. Hopefully you got something out of it, a bunch of resources that can assist you and help you out. Some Netflix series on your free time for you all to watch if you have the time. And then lastly, a special thank you to Josh for co-hosting and our two guests on the show with us for giving your time to us and to our students, essentially, to providing that resource and that support. Believe it or not, when they listen to your stories and they listen to different episodes, we do have students who reach out to us, really grateful for what they hear, for the experiences and for the time you both dedicate. So a big thank you to you all, Yanisa and Felipe. Thanks for being here with us today. And with that, I will say goodbye to everybody and tune in next week for our next episode or a couple weeks from now.
Goodbye.
I don't know why I waved.